The Holy Gospel according to Luke, the 15th chapter.
Glory to you, O Lord.
Now the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to Jesus, and the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, "This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them." So Jesus told them this parable. There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me." So he divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had, traveled to a distant country. There he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that country, and he began to be in need. So he went, hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating. No one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? But here I am dying of hunger. I'll get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' And so he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him, was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to the slaves, 'Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one. Put it on him. Put a ring on his finger, sandals on his feet. And get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate. Now his elder son was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves, asked what was going on, and he replied, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he has got him back safe and sound.' Then he became angry, refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him, but he answered his father, 'Listen, for all these years I've been working like a slave for you, and I've never disobeyed your command, yet you have never given me even a young goat so I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him.' And the father said to him, 'Son, you're always with me. All that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found.'" The Gospel of the Lord. The tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to Jesus. Tax collectors and sinners, those who by very definition are not in right relationship with God. And Jesus receives them, interacts with them. There are others who are near. The Pharisees and scribes. Those who took their faith seriously, who followed God's law scrupulously. They grumble together about his warm welcome that Jesus offers these sinners and that he actually eats with them, honoring them and in that act of eating with them, establishing relationship with them. Hearing the grumbling of the Pharisees and scribes, Jesus tells three parables that follow this opening, and they are for the Pharisees and the scribes. This parable that we often call the prodigal son is a culmination of that trio of stories. And there are many ways that you could read this text, but today we're going to look at it within the context of the gospel itself, through the eyes of the intended audience, the Pharisees and the scribes. Now, if you think about it, Neither of the sons in this parable is particularly admirable. The younger son, at best, takes his father's love and presence for granted, and at worst, he could care less. In fact, he demands his inheritance now, in effect saying to his dad, "You're dead to me. The only worth you have to me is your inheritance." He then takes that inheritance, goes to a far-off Gentile country, non-Jewish, and he wastes it in dissolute living. What a wonderful word. It's all those things that are contrary to Jewish law, indulgence in all kinds of appetites. And when the economy turns and he runs out of funds, boy takes up a job feeding pigs to survive. But even then, he earns so little, he considers eating the fodder for the pigs. Now, we don't fully grasp how out of bounds this would have been for Jews. Pigs are unclean to them. To even come in contact with them separates Jews from God and from each other. There's clear scriptural prescriptions against this. There's at least one rabbi who said it's better to be martyred than to come into contact with pigs. And so to feed pigs, to even think about eating their slop, is beyond degrading and shameful. Think of the worst thing that a person could do in this life, and that's it. This detail would have been deeply disgusting to the listening Pharisees and scribes. Shown that the younger son is not only out of bounds, he's way out of bounds. The younger son is shameful because he knows that his father is father. Look at the speech that he prepares, right? "Father, I am no longer." And he knows at the very least that dad will take him back despite everything, right? Talk about taking him for granted. But even with that, the younger son still denies his relationship with his father. "Just treat me as one of your slaves." And he certainly doesn't show that relationship in how he lives. But the older son isn't much better, is he? Look at his speech when he comes back to the house. He doesn't even acknowledge his father as father, but rather reveals he sees him as his master. "I've been working like a slave for you." He denies he even has a brother, "this son of yours." His failure to go inside and participate in the party to fulfill the obligations he would have had as elder son to host and welcome guests, to even refuse to sit down at the table, all of this is deeply offensive and shameful in this culture. And in his own way, the elder son is also denying relationship with his father. This parable, in many ways, is about a family breakdown. Both sons deny in different ways the relationship that exists with them and their father, and the elder son even denies the relationship exists with his brother. It's the father who is the only one in this story who is seeking to be in relationship with both of the sons. He wants to keep that family relationship, him to them, them to each other. He doesn't care so much what they do or even how they receive that constant love and care he has, but who always runs out of the house, who crosses the threshold to go to his son. A father loves his son so much that he'll do all the things that would embarrass or even shame any other landowner. Runs out to greet them. Runs down Dow's in front of everybody to greet his son who has come back, to hug his stinky, smelly, pig-slopping boy and restore him to his rightful place as a son with no hesitation, despite the way he was treated by his child. A father who leaves the party he is host of and goes to his elder son, one who is also bringing shame by not coming in, who feels wronged by the father, treated as a slave, used purely for his labor, receiving no reward. See, the father cannot imagine this banquet without both sons present. His deepest desire is that each would be in relationship with him and with each other. The father desires only to celebrate with extravagance as prodigal, right? That's what that word means, extravagance. The fact that his younger son, who was dead in almost every sense, has now come back to life. Rejoice! The one who was lost, the word here can also mean destroyed, has now been found, is known to them again. What he tells his eldest son is that the celebration is necessary. It's got to happen because the love the father holds for his children makes it necessary. Think of the joy you feel when your children come home again when they have been gone. Think now of the joy you will feel if they were dead to you and have been restored. Could you keep from celebrating? From rejoicing? No way! It's an imperative. Why? Because of your love. This is the love of the Father that makes rejoicing necessary. Now, one good question to ask in any parable is, who am I in this story? And let us assume for the moment that the Father is God, and that the action of the Father to cross the threshold to his sons is expressed in Jesus Christ, God, who has crossed the threshold of heaven and come to earth to be one with us. Now, I think if we're honest, on any given day, we could be either of the two sons. How often do we turn our back on God? How often do we squander the inheritance that God has given us, this beautiful creation, our intelligence, our creativity, the relationships that we have with parents, siblings, friends? How often have we squandered all of that in dissolute living? The pursuit of things that feel good to us but just waste the gifts we have. How often do we at best take our relationship with God for granted? Oh, God will be there. That's just who God is. How often do we return to God after that time in far lands with our prepared speech? God, if you just get me out of this, if you save me from this thing, I'll come to church more often. How often is that speech less than sincere? Something we say because we know God will respond. Because, again, that's just what God does, right? But note, in the story, it doesn't matter what the younger son did. Doesn't matter whether his return is brought about by a sincere turning of his heart and of his thinking, or simply a desire for three hots and a cot. God the Father can work with that. Doesn't seem to matter whether it's sincere or not. What matters is that you are here, in God's presence, embraced by God without reservation, clothed again with the best robe, the waters of baptism. Given the symbols of being an inheritor, in the story it's a ring, but maybe it's a cross marked on our foreheads. Celebrated with a sumptuous feast that the whole neighborhood is invited to. Some days, we might be more like the elder son. Envious as we look at the younger son gone off to do all the wicked things, play golf on a Sunday morning, having the freedom to do what you want. Angered by the fact that God still takes him back and throws a feast, no less. How's that so? That's more of my inheritance, frittered away. Who looks at our work for the Father as slavery, a duty so tight upon us there is no joy, only obligation. Come to church twice a week during Lent. Pray, read Scripture, help others. Okay. The son who has such a legalistic view of how God works that there is no grace, who would gladly take the younger son up on his offer to be a slave and no longer an heir. But no, the father comes out to that son as well. Comes out to invite him into the feast, who assures him, "You're always with me. All that is mine is yours already." This feast comes from an endless inheritance. The banquet is one you are invited to as well. In fact, it won't be the same without you. Come, come, join the celebration. Final note. The parable isn't resolved. We don't know whether the younger son truly had a change of heart, will once again be obedient to the father, or if he'll go off into dissolute living once again. We don't know if the elder son comes into the banquet, sets aside his pettiness and petulance, and goes to celebrate with his family, father and brother, or if he just storms off in a huff. All we know is both are welcome to the banquet. Both are loved enough by the Father that he will cross the threshold to them, will do things that are anathema to any other householder for the sake of having them both at the banquet. Because the banquet's not complete without both here. Because the joy is in the return of a lost one, a destroyed one into the fold, a joy that is incomplete when without all the family members there. And this is the reality that Jesus is trying to convey to the Pharisees and the scribes as they are present. And to the others who are eavesdropping on this, the sinners and tax collectors. We have a God who pursues us out of love, who wants nothing more than to be in relationship with us, who rejoices in those who are diligently working the vineyards and fields of God's creation, and those who return from their sojourn from the wilds apart from God. Our God does not care which son you are today. God only cares that you are here. At the table, celebrating with joy the fact that we are together, that this is the very nature of God that is so hard for the Pharisees and, in a different way, the sinners to understand. It's a reality we often find hard to understand, but we don't have to understand it. We just receive it. Trust it. Live it. And come to the banquet. Amen.